isolate one or the other. So I was trying to explain you some things about the organization of DNA in condensate phases and or nucleosome core particles. And before starting, I want to say that part of the work has been done by Juan Pelta, and it was his PhD in the aggregation of DNA by polyamides. And now Eric Raspoux has been doing a postdoc and now joining my group. And for nucleosome core particles, the large part of the work has been done by Amélie Le Forestier. And for the X-ray measurements, we have been collaborating with Dominique Durand at Lure and Patrick Davidson at the Laboratoire de Physique des Solides. And one part of the work which is, has been done in collaboration with Monica, who was at Cerclay at the time. And we have also been working and talking a lot with Jean-Louis Sicorac, also at Cerclay. So I will first show you how I decided to organize this talk. I will try to explain why I think it's interesting to look at condensed states of DNA from a biological point of view. And second, how we can reproduce in vitro these condensed states of DNA which exist in the cell. And then I will go to the observation of the dense phases of DNA. And there are two parts. First, the phases which are obtained in the presence of monovalent ions, and the phases which are obtained by another process, by interaction with multivalent cations. And then go to this part, which is the dense phases of nucleosome core particles. I will explain to you that it is DNA associated with protein. And in the same way, we can look at this organization in the presence of monovalent salts or in the presence of multivalent ions. But after I talked with Adrian, I understood that he was more interested that I focus on this part. So I would just give a few words about this. And in case you would be interested, I can talk more about this with you later. So first, why is it, in my opinion, interesting to look at condensed phases of DNA? And just remind you that the DNA molecule is a left-handed helix with a diameter of 22 angstrom and a pitch of 34 angstrom, and made of a succession of base pairs separated by 3.4 angstrom. And it's a polyelectrolyte molecule with a distribution of charges along the two strands of the double helix. And around the molecules, there are these counter ions, which are monovalent ions, and in our case, usually sodium ions. And this molecule is very long, and usually I can use two examples very different, the one from the other. In the bacteriophages on one side, for example, in the T7 bacteriophage, you have to imagine that there are 40,000 base pairs, which corresponds to a contour length of 14 micrometers. And this DNA, this molecule, is packaged into a capsid, a picosahedral capsid, which is 55 nanometers in diameter. And this leads to very high concentration, which have been calculated from the interlink distance. And there is a very nice work recently about this thing and the visualization of this DNA inside the capsid. And when you calculate the concentration of DNA there, it corresponds to about 450 milligrams per milliliter. And on the other side, if you look at a cell from a eukaryote, and for example, a human cell, you have to imagine that there are a lot of chromosomes and a lot of DNA molecules, which length varies from 1 to 10 centimeters. And each of these long DNA molecules is condensed into a domain, a territory inside the nucleus. And the nucleus is limited by this nuclear envelope. And this leads also to very high concentration, which are varying from about 50 to 350 milligrams per milliliter. So it's also very high DNA concentration. So this is the first thing. In the cell, the DNA is very concentrated. But there is another point I want to focus. Here, you just have the main component of the capsid is DNA. But in higher eukaryotes, DNA is not free. DNA is associated with other molecules inside of the nucleus. And there is a thing which is important, is that the nuclear medium is not homogeneous. It's something where DNA is dense, but it is also inhomogeneous. Because there are not only DNA, but also a lot of other variety of macromolecules which are inside this nucleus. And these molecules have different shapes, different size, different chemical composition. And so there are what Minton and Zimmermann have described as macromolecular crowding conditions. And this means that if you have a lot of different molecules together in the same volume, you cannot have the same. If you have one molecule at a place, you have not the other one. So this can lead to very inhomogeneous distribution of the species. For example, DNA can be condensed in one place and less condensed in another one. And the ions also may be irregularly distributed. And this is, I think, a thing which is important if you have to think about the organization of DNA. And sometimes you may have very high local concentration, even also if the average concentration may be low. So you have to imagine the nucleus as some place where the DNA is condensed, but it is not an all or none process. It may be highly condensed or less highly condensed. And you have to imagine that in space, but also in time during the cell cycle, the DNA can go through different stages of condensation. And it's important probably to know how it goes from one state to another one. And the last thing is that these changes in the DNA concentration, which can be the consequence, for example, of these changes in the ion environment locally, are probably important in the way the properties of the DNA molecule are expressed, because this DNA molecule works in such highly condensed conditions. And these functions are replication, the fact that one molecule has to be duplicated in two similar ones, the recombination, the exchange of genetic material from molecule during the mitosis, and also transcription, which means that one DNA molecule has to be copied into another nucleic acid and into proteins. And a lot of enzymes are involved in this process. And we know now there are data in the literature showing that it's also possible to stimulate the activity of these enzymes and these functional properties by increasing in vitro the concentration of DNA by one of the two methods I will show you now.
Is all of these conditions of very different concentrations and so on that you have described, does that require some form of non-equilibrium, stationary conditions to be maintained, or these correspond in general, let's say, one can think of them as equilibrium?
I'm not sure that it's always equilibrium conditions inside the cell, but I'm not a physicist, and you will probably have other answers from other people. I'm not sure that everything is in equilibrium. I don't think that everything is in the same conformation inside the nucleus. This is my way of thinking.
Yeah,
but we can. But what we know inside the volume, everything is not in the same state.
That's a very fundamental question, because one is thinking about applying equilibrium of the physical mechanics to the description of these processes. But if you stop, let's say, the non-equilibrium blocks, will that engage to something quite different?
Is that
something that people have a feeling
of? The background, which is going to show us many in vitro conditions where you can soon be able to bring, you can think through what the stability criteria are.
But
and then when you see it in the cell, you can see it.
But I think this is why I'm not always doing the experiments the way you are doing, because I also think that
the
chances
are,
because you're
still getting it to settle down. So
yes.
Long-lasting conditions.
Mm-hmm.
You said by death the material inside. And can you talk about ionic strength of the medium field?
Yes.
Yes,
we know that the average concentration of ions inside the cells are about 150 millimolar monovalent ions, depending on the type of cells. I would say average concentration. And for the divalent cations, it's about 10 millimolar. I should have transparency somewhere. And for the multivalent ions, it's very small concentration, millimolar concentration. But there is depend from cell to cell too. This data coming from Victor Blomfield giving concentration in different types of cells of the monovalent ions, sodium or potassium. It depends on the species, it's about 150, and divalent cations, and these are multivalent cations. This is the average concentration, but I think that locally we have no precise information about these variations. This is missing. And so there are two different mechanisms which are responsible for these high DNA concentration in the cell. First, the DNA molecules confined in the defined volume, the capsid or the nucleus. And there are other species inside, and this is one reason. And the second one is that DNA is a charged molecule, a polyelectrolyte, and that it may interact with oppositely charged molecules which are also inside the nucleus. And these two phenomena exist simultaneously. And so we can reproduce them separately. And to reproduce the macromolecular crowding conditions, we can just do ultrafiltration. We start from a solution of DNA, for example, and we can put under pressure and remove the solvent by which is going through the pores of the membrane. And so by this way you can reach concentration up to 200 milligrams per milliliter. But you can also do the same kind of concentration by polyethylene glycol, like people are doing in the group of Adrian. And in this case, you mix DNA and another polymer, which is usually a neutral one, and there is a phase separation process, and one molecule goes in one phase and the other one in the other phase. But when we observe the phases, we look at the same kind of thing. And the second method uses the charges of the DNA molecule. And in this case, it's completely different. You start from a dilute DNA solution. It can be 1 milligram per milliliter, but it can be also 1 microgram per milliliter. And you also have monovalent ions. Here we just have monovalent ions. And here you add charged molecule, polycations, spermidine, spermine, or other molecules, also polypeptides or proteins, or even amphiphilic cations. And in this case, the addition of these charged molecules, which are positively charged, will interact with the DNA molecules, and you will form very small aggregates in the solution. And if you centrifuge, you get pellet with these aggregated DNA molecules in equilibrium with a solution which may be highly, highly diluted, contrary to what exists here. So I will first talk about what happens when you put DNA in this first kind of condition in the presence of monovalent cations. So I would just give a summary of what happens when you put DNA in such conditions here and show you pictures to illustrate this. So when you start from dilute solution of DNA and you increase the concentration, you go from isotropic solution where molecules are completely disordered, and you go to crystalline phases on this side of the blackboard. And in between, you have these liquid crystalline phases. Liquid crystalline phases means that these phases are ordered, molecules are ordered, but the structure is fluid and molecules are free to move in the solution. And so we have, for concentration below 160 milligram per ml, we have been working with short fragment, 150 base pairs. And when the distance between molecules is about 49 angstrom, we have a first kind of organization which is called blue phases or double twist organization. I don't want to go into too much detail, but anyway, the DNA molecule, you have to imagine small cylinders. And a DNA molecule, and around the first molecule here, you have other ones which are slightly tilted with respect to the first one. And if you go like this, you cannot go very far, but you can create a cylinder like this here, and its size is limited. But you may have a lot of these cylinders, of these double twist cylinders, inside the solution.
What does it mean with each strand written on this cylinder?
It's just to try to explain in the space how DNA molecules are organized here. You have to imagine that each line here corresponds to one double-stranded helix. And so here, this is one double-stranded helix here, and just around it, another one will be like this. And another one will be like this. Exactly, I'm just looking at a small part of this bundle of molecules. And also you have to imagine that this different concentric layers do not exist. In fact, it's something continuous, but it's just too hard for the drawing. Mm-hmm. But this is quite perhaps difficult to understand.
But it's not a spiral. It's cylinder in cylinder in cylinder.
That cylinders do not exist, in fact.
Yeah.
So it's just continuous structure with molecules going like this, but you cannot go very far. The diameter is limited.
When you go along the molecule,
but the cylinder itself can be quite long. Quite long.
What's the size of the diameter?
I don't remember, but I have the dimensions here. What we found was the diameter was ranging from 40 to 200 nanometers, and what in our experience, and the length was smaller than 700 nanometers.
Are the cylinders stacked in any way, or just?
Yes, we found different kind of organization of these cylinders. A phase where the cylinders were disordered in the phase, and phases where they were ordered like what the physicists call flow phases, and which were observed with other cubic phases. But we were not able to determine the symmetries exactly of these phases.
And you use cryo-microscopy?
Yes, we did this. We do not observe this in polarizing microscopy, as I will show you for the other phases, because it's isotropic from an optical point of view. But we found them in electron microscopy.
Why are
these
called blue phases?
In physics, because they show, depending on the period of the system, they show blue color. The first one was observed and given blue color.
Or other colors.
But
it's
yes, there are other ones. Dimensions. But in this case, they have no colors.
So the blue wavelength corresponds to a pitch?
No, blue wavelength is essentially in blue phases, the crystals are ordered.
It's a pitch of the structure, not a pitch between molecules.
That's the separation between the cylinders.
Yes,
it's a separation.
Exactly.
The
cylinders, yes.
Sort of a factor of two or something, or square of three from the right.
Mm-hmm. How many concentric cylinders along one axis you have?
It's not discrete. So you just, the angle of the molecules at the surface of the cylinder can about 45 degrees. You cannot go far away. If you go far away, you create this thing, which is a cholesteric phase. With instead of having two directions of twist, you just have one direction. Because if you go far away, you cannot twist in two directions. And this is what happens in the solutions of DNA. When you increase the concentration, you go from, I'm sorry?
Go far away from here, say 100 degrees, you go back. And you rotate again, you come back at a different angle. Mm. So if you, there's a contradiction between the geometric backing and what you can do in three-dimensional space. So it's sort of a topological defect. But then you take cylinders and you pack them and arrange them in a crystal. So each cylinder goes to 45 degrees, so two of them can touch like this. Mm-hmm. And you rearrange them and you get various crystallines.
Mm-hmm. And the blue comes out at this distance.
This
is the first time.
But you can see.
And so with this particular molecule, so we obtain this kind of blue phases. And with longer molecules, we obtain other kind of this organization with what we call precholesteric stages. When the concentrations increase, we go to this classical cholesteric phase. So in this case, you will recognize again the molecule here, and the planes the same way do not exist, but you have the rotation of the molecules going continuously like this. And this occurs when distances between helices goes from 49 to 32 angstrom. And then we have another transition to another phase, which is called a columnar hexagonal phase. This, at this transition, the twist between molecules is lost, and molecules remain parallel to each other, here like this, but they form an hexagonal lattice in section. So all molecules are like this, and the structure is fluid, so molecules can move more or less. And this occurs for concentration ranging from this one to this one, and for smaller anti-release distances. So I have, I think, no time to go into the details of the defect of this structure and all the transitions and such things. But I just want to illustrate this by polarizing microscopy to show you the different patterns of this. This one I cannot show, but these two, how they appear in the polarizing microscope. So I will show you a few pictures.
So short fragments, you think that when interacts with spacing of less than 0.9 inches, you get crystals?
Yes, and we go to different kind of crystals.
Hexagonal
crystal and orthorhombic crystals. Yes, we have crystalline phases.
Yeah, around 28 and some interaction.
Exactly, yeah. 29. With this condition.
Sure.
Could you turn it off, please? Thank you. So this is the dilute DNA solution, and these are the germs of the cholesteric phase which appear in it, with the periodicity characteristic of the cholesteric organization. And when you I don't remember exactly, but these can be more or less larger. This is objective 40, I would say, in the microscope. I don't remember
exactly. This is about
2.5 micrometers of periodicity here. This is a good number. Okay.
Yeah, it's about
No, the distance is half of this. So the distance is 125 micrometers. That's right. I'm sorry?
What kind of image?
It's polarizing microscopy. This means that everything which is disordered appears black here. And what is ordered appears very refringent in this condition. And so this germ conflict.
This is all short fragments, right?
For this picture, it's short fragments. We obtain the same thing with longer fragments, but in this case, it's much more difficult to obtain them, much longer because it's difficult to organize them. But we observe the same kind of organization. This is a completely cholesteric phase with the same period pattern, and here's the defect. This is again the cholesteric phase with the same periodicity. And so this is classical. But what is less classical is that this is also a cholesteric phase. But in the other previous pictures, we were looking at the cholesteric phase from the top, and the cholesteric axis, the structure was going like this, and we were looking on top of it. Now we are moving it this way, and we are looking here, and molecules are rotating this way. So there is no periodicity, but it's still a cholesteric phase. But in this case, the pitch is much, much smaller. It's 0.2 to 0.4 micrometer instead of 2.4. So, and we don't exactly know why we are able to, in some cases, to get this very small pitch. And this is another picture of the same cholesteric phase again. But as I told you, the pitch was going like this, normal to the plane of the preparation. And this kind of lamellar structure may become to be distorted regularly and to form such patterns with this polygonal field. This is still a cholesteric structure, and when you look at this at the level of the electron microscopy, you find again the same picture.
Is there any magnetic field here at line?
Sorry, nothing.
No.
And this is again this cholesteric phase in the planar view, so without periodicity. These are the germs of the more concentrated phase which are growing inside the cholesteric one. And the concentration increases, and this is the fully columnar hexagonal phase. And when the concentration increases even more, I forgot to tell you, but here the phase was quite fluid. These are the walls, and in this domain here, for example, you have the DNA molecules which are more or less in the plane of the picture here, and they are going like this and turning. So it's a kind of flexibility of the columns of molecules. And when we increase, what we see is that here is again a domain, but you see all these striations. This means that the columns of molecules are starting folding more and more. And in electron microscopy, we can also see how the folding occurs. I think it's not very my focus. And here, when it is very, very much folded, you lost these beautiful colors because it is so disordered inside that you cannot see them anymore. So, I think...
There was much surprise when you have sort of like concentrate and you have some disorder things on the surface, you say? That
It was in the picture.
There was a tube coming out. Yeah.
Here? No, this is just that when you are looking at the cholesteric from the top, you have this rotation. And you can imagine that between two planes where the molecules are oriented like this, you can consider that this is a layer, for example. Like this, you can say it's a layer structure. And so in planar texture, these layers are more or less flat and parallel to slide and cover slip. But imagine that this layer are begin to distort like this in this direction and to distort also in the other direction. And they form this kind of hats which are on top of each other. And one theory is the top on one side and the other one. And there is always connections. And this has been very well described in some kind of cholesteric liquid crystal. This is what I've been drawing here. And you have the planes here of the cover slip and the plane of the slide. And you see if you look at this, you see that the squares here are not the same as the plane of the cover slip and then the plane at the slide, for example. You can look into the structure to see what happens.
Are these sort of instabilities in the plane actually organized? Can one see a pattern of
I don't know what you mean by instability. For me, it's
the hill coming up.
It's not. There are no helices there.
Pardon?
There are no helices. This line are straight.
No. Hills.
Hills.
At the tops of the hat. Organized.
Yes, it's regular. What you are seeing here is the top of the hat here. So they form a square here.
So you get actually a lattice.
Of course.
Do you get connections between the different layers? Like you get like a net?
Yes, we can reconstruct from the analysis of this kind of images how the layers are organized between the two levels in section. And I have been doing this for DNA, but Yves Boudigan, with whom I have been working before, has been doing this job much more in detail with a very large pitch structure where you can see these patterns and simultaneously the cholesteric striation. And in this case, you reconstruct everything inside the volume of it. So I can give you.
Another liquid crystal in systems or something particular?
Could you
see this in many other liquid crystals?
Yes, there are many liquid crystals, not
and
all of them. Yes, you can see this. But DNA is not the best one to look at the structure because the pitch is so small in this one that you cannot see it anymore. So you need a cholesteric phase where the pitch is large enough to be able to completely understand this. But we have been able to do phase fracture electron microscopy on this kind of textures and to look at how the layers are distorted in the phase. Yes. This was just what I wanted to say. I have more if you want question later. So I wanted to, may I turn it? Yes. I'm going to the second part of the talk, which was DNA, not with monovalent ions, but in interaction with multivalent ions. And in the literature, there are many, many works dealing with this, which have been using, and people have been using DNA fragments of different lengths and different kinds of condensing agents from polyamines, spermidine and spermine, or cobalt hexamine with trivalent or tetravalent charges, magnesium in the presence of water and ethanol, or polypeptide or proteins, polylysin, protamines, each and each one. And there is a very good review by Bloomfield in 1998 summarizing most of his observations. And when the experiments I remember you are polycarbonates, you induce the aggregation of DNA. When you do these experiments at very low DNA concentration in the solution, starting solution, a few micrograms per ml, in this case what you get are objects which have small aggregates, either rods or torus, with these dimensions. And they can be made either of one only molecule, it's a molecular, monomolecular collapse, or it can be, they can also be made of a few molecules. In this case, these are multimolecular aggregates. But people found that in these aggregates, the packing of DNA was probably hexagonal. And there were other works, experimental results done at higher concentration, and a few, one about 1 milligram per ml. And in this case, you get large aggregates. And they were characterized also by X-ray diffraction to show an hexagonal lattice, but also by other methods, circular dichroic spectrum, which were of the site, I cannot go into the detail, but which led the author to suspect that it was perhaps a normal organization of DNA inside these aggregates. So these were the data, and so we decided to go again into the organization of these aggregates. And since there was this suggestion of a chiral organization and of a hexagonal packing of DNA, we tried to get large amounts of these aggregates and to look at the structure of them. So we do again the work, but with the short fragments, 150 base pairs, with the sodium salt of this DNA. And the polydispersity was measured to be ranging from 130 to 360 base pairs. And these DNA molecules are in Tris buffer. This is a Tris ion in presence of chloride. There are sodium ions, a starting counter ion. And these are the formulae of the cations which have been used to induce a condensation. And we compare these three types. And the spermin and spermidine are biologically significant, as I showed you at the beginning, and they are involved in the regulation of many biological functions. And so experimentally what we are doing is that we start from the solution containing the DNA. We add the sodium chloride to adjust the concentration, the final concentration that we want at the end. The Tris buffer, and lately we have the polycation, one or the other one. So we mix everything and we wait for 15 minutes until we get microaggregates here, and after we centrifuge to get the pellet. And we, in the supernatant, we can measure the quantity of DNA which remains in the supernatant, because sometimes all the DNA sediments, sometimes part of it remains in solution. And so from the absorbance at 260 nanometer, we get the DNA concentration in the here. In some cases, with cobalt hexamine, it was not possible to use this method because cobalt hexamine also absorbs at this wavelength. So we used radioactivity. This means that we put radioactive labeling of on DNA, and we measure the radioactivity in the sample after. But we get the same kind of information. And from this measurement, we can prepare the curve, the precipitation curve. And second, from the pellet, we can look at the nature of the pellet by polarizing microscopy or X-ray diffraction or electron microscopy.
The microaggregates are the rods and the toruses?
No, I separated at the beginning because when to get the rods or the torus, you need to start with very, very low concentration of DNA, because if the molecules are too concentrated, they will mix together and form aggregates. This is what we want to do here. But to get the torus, you need to be at low starting conditions.
So these might be clumps of
torus? Probably not, also because we have short fragments. And also, even if you have longer molecules, molecules are probably going from one region of the tube to another one, so you don't have torus anymore. To get them, you need really starting, very low starting conditions.
Will there be like aggregates of rods, spiral rods and grooves?
Could you say again, please?
Would you have then aggregates of rods?
No, I think that in this case we have no rods and no torus, because we are not in conditions to get them. So let's start just with an example with spermidine. This is a kind of precipitation curve that we obtain. So we start with 100% of DNA in solution, and we increase the amount of spermidine which is added, and for each point it's an experimental point. So for each concentration of spermidine, we measure the amount of DNA in the supernatant, and we vary the concentration of sodium chloride. So for low concentration of sodium chloride in the solution, we start here, and we have nearly all the DNA precipitated for this range of spermidine concentration, and when you increase, the amount of DNA sedimented decreases. And when you increase also the amount of sodium chloride, you also prevent the precipitation of DNA. So you can prevent the precipitation by increasing this concentration of spermidine or by increasing the sodium chloride concentration.
And possible, you said that the carboxamine absorbed at that frequency. Is it possible to measure both the agent and the DNA concentration?
This would be ideal, but we didn't do this.
Well, in that case,
we try.
Even with the cobalt.
Yes, but we try. We have been thinking about this, but we didn't succeed in having good data about this. But what we can do is compare this precipitation curve with obtained with the same method, so with radioactivity, just to make sure to compare the same method with spermidine, with spermine, and with cobalt hexamine. And so spermidine is 3+, spermine 4+, and cobalt hexamine 3+. So for a given sodium chloride concentration, for example in red here, you have this curve here, this curve for spermine, and this curve for cobalt hexamine. If we compare the concentration which are necessary to, here you can compare the efficacy of first of precipitation of the ion, and you see that the amount which is necessary to induce the precipitation is the first ion to precipitate is spermine here, and the second is cobalt hexamine, and the third is spermidine. If we look at this concentration to induce, to get half precipitation, this is the character we took at the beginning. And so the order is first 4+, but after between these two ions, which have three charges, it is cobalt more efficient to precipitate. But if we look at the resolubilization now here, the more efficient is spermidine, the second is spermine, and the third is cobalt hexamine. So it's not the reverse order of the first of the precipitation effect. So, and if we look at the amount of sodium chloride which is necessary to resolubilize here, we see also that here it's 100 millimolar sodium chloride, here it's 500 millimolar, and here it's 1.2 molar sodium chloride. So what we see is the more efficient to precipitate is the 4+ charge polycation, but it's not the only effect which is taken into consideration. So we have the effect of the charge of the cation, which is important, but also something else, and probably the shape and the size of the ions which are involved, since we cannot just relate this to the number of charges of the cation.
I'm trying to get an idea. Plus four species bind, but of course neutralizes the charge more than plus three.
Yes.
And so if it's a criterion of partly neutralization, it's too complicated, I guess. If you are plotting here the concentration initially in the solution, so after the precipitation has occurred, it's likely the supernatant concentration is always.
Yes, of course, yes. Because most of the polycations have been falling down with the DNA.
Yeah.
That's true.
Right. So if you work backwards and say, I know the supernatant concentration, therefore I know how much DNA is in the pellet, and you say it's, for example, neutralized by the condensing agent, Can you infer how much agent is above? Because it may be a very small fraction of these.
I think there is a very small fraction of these cations in the supernatant. Because I think that most of it is in downs, but I don't have the the values, and so you know.
What do you need more concentration of phosphates in solution? If you recalculate the concentration of DNA into concentration of phosphates.
I did, but we did with Eric, but I don't remember. So.
The condition where?
Phosphate.
Phosphate.
Because
phosphate.
All these experiments have, all these experiments have been done with 1 milligram per ml. In concentration of 1 milligram per ml starting conditions, but this does not mean that this is the concentration in the pellet.
Sure.
Okay, but all these have been done at the same DNA concentration, global concentration in the volume.
There is no way to get some absorption answer which would tell you what is the relationship between the presence of this ions like homotaxamine or spermine or spermidine in the bulk and or on the DNA.
No, we
is
don't.
Is there any way to establish, like in surface physics?
I don't know
no.
how to do this. So, this was just to show you that it was not so simple to correlate the precipitation effect and the resolubilization effect. And now we go to the for each experimental point where the amount of DNA which is precipitated is large enough, we can look at the nature of the pellet. And I summarize here the observation that we've made for these three types of ions. With spermidine, spermine, and cobalt hexamine, and we have been looking at X-ray measurements in purple, polarizing microscopy in green, and electron microscopy in brown. With spermidine and spermine, we have observed a cholesteric phase and an hexagonal phase, both cases.
What
and
do you
with
mean, both at the same time or different conditions?
No, I will define the condition later. This is what we found for a lot of different experimental points. So we have looked at all the experimental points where it was possible to look at the pellet. And so what I put here are the distances which we observe in the pellet, and just trying to compare them with the data observed in the corresponding phases in the presence of monovalent ions. And so this range of concentrations here correspond to the range we were observing with the presence of monovalent ions. The difference are, for the cholesteric phase, the difference are that for spermine, midine, and for spermine, the pitch of the cholesteric phase is much larger than with monovalent ions. And also it was trapping a lot of isotropic droplets. And we cannot have the same thing with monovalent ions. Here we have been centrifugating the pellets, and always we were trapping bubbles of very dilute solution. It was quite impossible to remove them, and I think that this means something, but I don't know why. So I wanted just to put this here. And the columnar hexagonal phase, the range of concentration was also correct, that the longitudinal order with the molecule, instead of being free to move, more or less free to move in this direction, were more or less ordered also along this direction, as we can saw from the X-ray patterns. And what is correlated is that the molecules were ordering in this direction, and the structure of the hexagonal phase as seen in polarizing microscopy was also different, probably in correlation with this. And this is not perfectly understood, but we also found some periodicity in electron microscopy. We don't know if it is correlated with this or not. And the same is true for the spermine aggregates. And I will show you how they look like. No. It's a columnar. There is no layering, but the molecules themselves are not independent the one from the other. They are more or less aligned, so the pitch is not exactly in register, but there is some kind of ordering along this direction because we have some sharp arcs along some of the layers.
This is the short fragment?
The same DNA fragments, exactly. And just to answer your question before coming to the picture, I will show you for cholesteric, for the spermidine case, what was the range of observation of the cholesteric and hexagonal phases. This was with spermidine, and this is the concentration of spermidine, global concentration also in the tube, and here the concentration of DNA. And for low spermidine and sodium chloride concentration, we have this hexagonal phase. E means that we also have this concentrated phase in equilibrium with the very diluted energy. So, and when you increase both concentration, you get here phase with cholesteric and hexagonal, and then only cholesteric. So the less ions we have, the more condensed is the phase in the pellet. And we try just to add divalent, but I don't have to go this. But when you have divalent cation, you also move the phase diagram exactly as if you were increasing the sodium chloride concentration in the pellet. But I think I don't have to go.
In that solution in that experiment, when you follow the phase diagram,
mm-hmm.
when you have these pellets, is the solution on top of a clear solution of supernatant, is that huge volume compared to the volume of the pellet or not?
It's a huge volume compared to the volume of the pellet. But in the pellet, you don't have always the same amount of DNA, the same percentage of DNA.
I'm just wondering whether...
So it's always the same global concentration of DNA and the same global volume. But the amount in the supernatant and the volume, the amount in the pellet changes completely from with the concentration.
What I'm wondering whether these conditions are conditions of fixed chemical potential of spermidine. No.
No,
you don't
no.
have really excess of spermidine, let's say.
No.
She said those are all initial global concentrations.
Yes. Yeah. It's the global concentration is the tube in the mass.
In one case, equilibrium between two different phases is not surprising because you don't have...
No, this I already talked with Adrian a lot of times. He told me that it was not a good way to do it. It depends on what...
But I mean,
and you agree. And you agree for some reason.
What do you mean? You don't have it.
No, if your ions would have and water would have a fixed chemical potential, in other words, if you would have a condensed phase of DNA which would be very small and have a huge solution of everything else, then just from Gibbs phase rule, you are allowed to have only one phase of DNA. You're not allowed to have two phases in equilibrium with each other. In extended range. I mean, you're allowed to have only a line separating, let's say, hexagonal phase and cholesteric phase, but you can't have coexisting two domains of coexisting phases or extended range. It's just your phase rule. But if you're limited in the number of ions, if your chemical potential is not set, then Gibbs phase rule allows you to equilibrate the phases.
So like you would call it like microphases.
No, why? Moral phase equilibrium. Your two phases can coexist over a whole range of conditions, and under conditions of fixed chemical potential, it's just not allowed.
Chemical potential changes in your initial conditions as the separation occurs, mm-hmm. as well as salt concentration. Is that concentration or after that activity during the aggregation process? Ions are being bound out of the solution by the DNA. So then there's always going to be two phases, right? The I is the supernatant.
But this is why we are not thinking exactly the same way, because for me it was interesting to have in coexistence, for example, two kind of order and to go with a very simple changes in this concentration or in this concentration to go there and come back and such things. I think from that it's another way to think the problem.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sometimes this way is more convenient.
It depends. We are not answering the same thing, I think.
I think it's a little bit. Sorry for my ignorance. Is as a crystal, is structure growing slowly, or should I consider it a sort of a quenching?
The way we are doing it, it's kind of quenching, but anyway.
So that partially answers because the system is not in equilibrium by the quenching.
I think so.
I
think it's in equilibrium. We did a lot of, I could explain to you if you want, we these dimensions by different way. We look about the temperature and such things, and we always come back to the same ordering, the same proportion and the same ordering in the phase. I can detail if you want. And so I can just show you how the look. Could you turn it off? So this is the with spermidine. These are the droplets of DNA condensed by spermidine, and this is the isotropic solution, but it has been turned purple just by addition of a plate which gives the colors, but in the other observation it would be black. So this is the dilute supernatant, very dilute supernatant isotropic, and these are the cholesteric droplets. And this is the cholesteric phase, and you see it's a planar cholesteric phase without fingerprint. But in some cases we start seeing the fingerprint, but the pitch is very, 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 very large, and it's quite these are different lines that we see inside the planar structure here. And to see the cholesteric pitch, it was necessary to increase the temperature and to change the pitch by temperature to be able to recognize really the cholesteric patterns here. And in this planar cholesteric phase here, what you see here are the small domains of the hexagonal phase, and you see that the textures are completely different from the textures observed in the hexagonal phase in the presence of sodium ions. And so these are monodomains, so the molecules present one given orientation in one domain. And in other places they are full of such germs. This is a cholesteric sample, because the cholesteric phase is much fluid and it flows around. And in one case it was possible to a few times we observe this typical hexagonal textures, and in one case it was possible to press very very strongly on these small hexagonal germs and to transform them into this textures of the hexagonal phase, and even to move the walls here. So we are really quite convinced that it is the same phase, but with a very high, highly restricted fluidity of the molecules. So they are very, they cannot move so much, so the columns cannot turn and curve and such things. And just to show you how you can see this. This is this after another process. This is the hexagonal. These are the hexagonal germs. And in electron microscopy, this is cryo electron microscopy. And you see here the hexagonal packing of the DNA molecule in the film of water, and with here this intermediate distance around 30 angstroms. So it's possible to look at the microaggregates before they are centrifuged and looked and recollected in a pellet. Just in the suspension, it's possible to look at the ordering. They are always short fragments of DNA coming close by and forming this hexagonal pack.
Not little strands forming
a crystal. What does it?
You don't get something like a blue phase.
No, as far as we know here, we don't have blue phase, hexagonal phase.
Professor, right here. What you see there, those are what? Black dots.
Here?
Yeah.
So this was, we add the spermidine in the solution, and before doing the centrifugation, we have this suspension with very small aggregates of DNA inside.
Yeah.
And when you take just a sample of this, and you freeze it very quickly, you have this film of water which is transformed into an amorphous phase, and you look at this. These are DNA fragments which are seen like this.
So it's really like, what, 10, 20 DNAs already making this little?
Yes, these are very small ones. Sometimes they are very huge ones. But I understand your question, because it seems to be some twist around it. We have to.
What is gray matter?
This
water.
Is water.
It's just water.
Yes, you are looking at the contrast of DNA with, by comparison with the contrast of water. So just to. I think I. Okay, I in that case. Now, when Eric arrived in the lab, we tried to understand what was really going on in these solutions. And what he told us was that the interesting point was this precipitation point, the starting of the precipitation in the curve, and this point where resolubilization occurs. And so he has been trying to look at how these points depend on all range of variations and concentration of DNA, over all this range of concentration of DNA and concentration of, and he used spermin in this case, concentration of spermin. So such that for X experimental curve, for example, this one, there's 2 points, this one and this one, which correspond, for example, here, you have this dilute solution, you have the precipitation point, and you have this two-phase system with the pellet in equilibrium with the solution, and then again this resolubilization point. And all this diagram was constructed with this range of concentration. And so this is the domain where the two phases coexist, condensed phase and the dilute phase. And these are the experimental points here. And what he observed was that there were three different regimes here. One at low concentration here, one at medium concentration, and another one here. And the low DNA concentration was shown to be the spermin concentration necessary to induce the aggregation was shown to be constant. And in this regime, this spermin to DNA concentration equal 0.2 about. And in this this concentration range, we have this relationship. So we have been collaborating with Monica and Saclay, and what they have been doing together, because I will not go into this theory, but we had this experimental system, and we saw that this regime was dependent on a lot of parameters: molecular weight, presence of monovalent ions, whereas this regime was independent of everything, apparently. Independent of molecular weight of DNA and independent of the amount of salt, at least. And with the theory, what Monica proposed was that it was probably also independent on the flexibility of the DNA molecules and on the charge density. So to do this, Eric has been doing new experiments. And we have been doing experiments to test if the flexibility of the chain and the density was an important parameter. We have been comparing double-stranded DNA, 146 base pair, and single-stranded DNA, which has a different charge density and a different flexibility. And in this case, in red, you have the double-stranded DNA, and you find the same points as before. And in this regime here, you have the DNA in red, and you also have the single-strand DNA in green. So in this regime, apparently, double-stranded DNA and single-stranded DNA superimposed. So it seems to be true, but there is no dependence of the charge density of the molecule, since in this regime, the experimental points seem to be superimposed. And secondly, what was also proposed, that probably this regime was independent on the shape of the particle. So we have been using particles which are the units in chromatin, which are the nucleosome core particles, which are made of protein, and there is DNA coiled around it. And the length of DNA here corresponds to this 146 base pair fragments. And so these have been prepared in the lab, and we have been working also for other things. So we have been using this with Eric to compare if the shape of the particle was also important to know in this regime. And you see here in purple this nucleosome core particle, and in this regime, in this case, it's difficult to go exactly in the same conditions because we have to keep a certain amount of monovalent ions to make sure that the particles do not dissociate, because you have the DNA coiled around the proteins here. And if you remove everything, all the ions, you will dissociate the proteins from the DNA. So we cannot reduce as much as in the other cases the amount of monovalent ions. that in this case you also have the superimposition of the data here, and at low, when you reduce the amount of ions, you go, you increase the life of this regime.
Just to understand something, let's say you start, you pick one DNA concentration, maybe 10 to the plus 1.
Yes.
And the idea would be you start adding conceptually.
It's exactly like before.
Yeah.
So we start with this concentration of DNA here,
yeah.
And this is the precipitation curve, not the resolubilization, just the precipitation curve. Yes, so we look at the concentration which is necessary to begin, to start the precipitation.
Francis, on that plot, when you say concentration of sperm, it's concentration of molecules or concentration of charge groups?
So, this, there is a perfect superposition. If we take into account not the number of charged phosphates in the particle here, but the number of charged phosphates which are not interacting already with the protein inside.
Sure.
So if we use this, so for double-stranded and single-stranded DNA, we use the concentration of charged phosphate is equal to the concentration of phosphate, but for this particle, the concentration of phosphate is 0.55 the concentration of DNA phosphate at the beginning.
And what I'm asking about is fermion. When it's what fermion concentration, is this concentration of molecules or concentration of charged amine groups?
No, this is the concentration of fermion.
Of molecules.
Molecules.
So, so it's 4 plus. If you try to plot it versus concentration of charge of plus 1 charges, so
but it's just a factor of 4.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm wondering if you just do a factor of 4, would you come up with a slope of 1 as a curve? Is that just simply because you need 100% concentration and that's the whole source of the universal? Yeah, just a slope of 1, slope of 0.9 or something.
0.8, I think.
0.8. Yeah, so basically what it's saying is that you need enough spermine to occupy 80% of phosphate and it will collapse independent of the spermine.
In this regime.
Yeah.
But it's not true at lower concentration.
Yeah, no,
and
no,
it's not true for higher concentration,
sure.
Apparently, but it's more difficult to see.
Sure. No,
And again, small fragments of chromatin, when you look at the number of charges which are also free, you get exactly the same thing here. So, this was the last experiments we have been doing. And how many minutes do I have more?
That's true.
But anyway,
for a few minutes, but
yes, that's why I was.
It's most important that, yeah.
Okay, so I don't want to talk too much about this. And so, what I wanted just in a few minutes to say is that we are trying to go from the biological point of view, from this behavior of this DNA alone in solution to the organization of these particles, because these are the units of organization of the DNA in the cell, which is in fact the DNA molecules form a nucleosomic structure like this with a bed structure, a regular structure like this. And so we have been preparing these particles, and just to give you just an idea of what is the structure of this material. This is chromatin which has been extracted from the cell and deposited onto a grid, and you see this bead on a string aspect. And these particles have been studied, and the group of Luger and Richmond in Switzerland has recently published the structure of this particle. So you have this 146 base pair DNA coiled around the central histone core. This is a top view, and this is a side view. So it's kind of a part of a cylinder, see, with the proteins inside and the DNA at the surface here. So the DNA has the negative charges, and the histones here are made of different alpha helical domains and with tails which are negatively charged like this. So you have four kinds of histone, and each one is in two different examples. And when we look at the number of charges here, you have all these negative, positive charges along the histones, and these negative charges for DNA. So this means that we have about 160 charges on the particles. And so we have been starting the same kind of experiment, looking how organize these particles in solution with the different metals. I will just show you when you concentrate the particles in the presence of monovalent ions, what happens.
How many circles of the DNA does it
One and three-fourths of the second one. Less than one, less than two turns.
Less than two.
And so this is what happens when the solutions are grown in and observed between slide and cover slip. It's difficult to see here, but you should see star-shaped flowers here with a six-fold symmetry. And here this is also a germ here with a six-fold symmetry. And this is also one of these germs which have been growing much more with a six-fold symmetry here, but the six strands are separated when the germs become to be very large. And inside you, this is a large germ here, seen in the other direction. So this is the shape of these germs with here. When you are looking in this plane, for example, you see the six-fold symmetry, like here, or there. And when you are looking at the other side of the germ, you are looking at this kind of shape, or different ones when they are smaller. And what appears is that we compare this data with polarizing with electron microscopy and also X-ray diffraction analysis, and it appears that we have these particles which stack on top of each other. They form columns like this, and these columns pack to form an hexagonal network. But when the structures grow, in fact, we have this shape with a left-handed macroscopic shape of the germs, which when they are growing. So there is an hexagonal packing of the columns, but there is also chirality between the columns which appear.
There's also what?
A chirality, because the germs grow, but they become left-handed. So we can look at the structure inside. I don't want to go into all these things. What I just wanted to show you is that these hexagonal germs were obtained when at high monovalent salt concentration, 150 millimolar added salt. But when we are at low sodium chloride concentration, the shape of the germs growing in the solutions are completely different. Here we are looking at the same material, just the amount of monovalent salt around the solutions, which is different. And you see these tubes here. And depending on the concentration, you have very long tubes here, like this, the population. And when the concentration increases, there are some other stuffs growing at the end of the tubes. And when the concentration is even higher, you have these bushes growing. And we also did the experiments with polyethylene glycol, and we adjusted the concentration. And apparently the shape of the germs depends on the concentration. We followed this concentration, but you can stabilize a different concentration and see the different shapes corresponding to these different concentrations. And in this case, the things are not completely established, but these tubes are also helicoidal structure. You see here some of these tubes here, and you should be able to see here the helical structure at the end, and also here. I don't know if you see it. Do you see it? Yes. And in this case, we also probably have an hexagonal, distorted hexagonal packing of the columns. So we also probably have columns of nucleosomes, like this. But in this case, they are probably called around helical structures. And in the columns, apparently the nucleosome core particles are not stacked on top of each other perfectly, but they are probably tilted, the one with respect to the others. But the packing is distorted hexagonal. We are not exactly completely, the study is not completely finished. But what I want just to show you is that with the same particles, just depending on the amount of added monovalent salt, we have two different shapes, completely different, of these higher organization of the nucleosome core particles. And so we have been wondering whether these changes in the textures were due to the small changes in the structure of the particles themselves, or if there were changes in the interactions between these particles. And so apparently the first experiment shows that we have both. So we have the structure of the particle remains the same, but apparently it's the tails of the histones core which can go out more or less of the particle. And the interactions we have been looking at with X-ray, small angle X-ray diffraction, and apparently they're always repulsive, but also more or less screened between very low sodium concentration and 163 millimolar concentration of sodium. So we are also dealing with interactions, and they are different in between two, and probably the interactions are different between particles in the columns, and interaction between columns are also different. But in both cases, we also have chirality between the columns. And just to finish with biology, I wanted to show that this is another point of interest. I think it's the chirality between all these systems, because these are chromosomes in living cells. They're real pictures, and these are helical chromosomes. You can see here, this is in a plant which is named Tradix cancer, that this helical structure of chromosome is very common, and this is another example in human chromosomes of this helical structure of the chromosome. So I think, in fact, we are going this way. Okay, so thank you very much.